Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to Solo Spotlight. I'm your host, Ryan McDougall. This week's conversation is one I've been looking forward to, especially with Edmonton's municipal election coming up October 20th. My guest, Troy Pavlik, software developer, theater reviewer, and one of the city's most well-known civic watchdogs. If you've ever watched him on social media, you know he's sharp, he's blunt, and he doesn't mind calling City Hall out on its nonsense. In this episode, we dig into what's really going on behind this year's election. Why voter turnout keeps falling. Why most people decide who they're voting for 3 days before Election Day. And what actually makes campaigns connect with the real people. We talk about the power and the limits of social media and local politics, the myth of the political elite, and how data and transparency could actually make city government accountable to the people paying the bills. It's a grounded, no-nonsense look at Edmonton politics from someone who spent years watching the process up close. Before we jump in, if you're new here, make sure you subscribe, hit like, and share this episode with someone who is following the local elections. Every click helps push thoughtful local conversations into more feeds, and that's what keeps shows like this alive. With all that said, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Troy Pavlik.
What are my levels here? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Solo Spotlight. I'm here with Troy Pavlik. Pavlik? Is that it?
Pavlik, yeah.
Pavlik. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Yeah. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. There's just over 20 days left until the election. I've been burning the candle at both ends for the past 20 days. I'm ready to die.
Yeah.
So as soon as this is over, October 21st, I'm going to, like the fat bears, hibernate and not wake up.
Yeah, it's interesting. The closer we get to elections, you start to see people get a little bit squirrely. People that have invested a lot of money in campaigning, they're like, oh, I think I might still be losing. And they're funneling a ton of money. And then it all turns into, it's unfortunate because some people that come off as humble near this part, it's all slander.
I mean, they can take solace. No one's going to be as bad as Michael Ostry, who spent $250,000 of his own dollars to get sub 10% of the vote. Rip Michael Ostry.
That's crazy. I'm just putting on a little timer here. Gotta always keep my time. Elections are crazy, and especially when you look at municipal elections, because I always try to convince my coworkers and let them know, like, this is the most impactful that, like, any of these elections are going to be to, like, your day-to-day living in terms of your property tax or construction or whether the road that you want expanded is going to get expanded. And you see a drastic amount of people, even during this one, the debate with Global, how many people were still undecided.
Yeah. And this is not abnormal. When Don Iveson won in 2013, you know, he won with a handy like 65-67% of the vote. It was a dominating victory, but a poll that came out in around September of that year had 45% undecided. So it is not abnormal to have most people undecided, even at this point in the race. You know, I door knock a lot, and the biggest voting demographic is the old people. And I was talking to one really nice lady over in Argyle, and she's like, oh, I'll take your pamphlet. And she put it in the bucket, and we started talking. So she's got a bucket by the door. She puts all the pamphlets, all the flyers that she gets, and then 3 days before E-Day, she'll open them all up, she'll read them cover to cover, and decide who she votes for. She's not going to a website. She's not going on Instagram. That's how she decides the election. And she does it 3 days before the vote. And that's not abnormal, which for you and I, born of this millennium, seems abnormal. But that may well be who decides the election.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because in my mind, I initially think, oh, the one who has like control over social media is the one that's going to. But a lot of these people don't vote, or a lot of it's just passing by. Like, it's
social media has never mattered on municipal elections, with the noticeable caveat of Don Iveson and the head Nenshi. They were both Twitter candidates. That was when Twitter had just, you know, become a mainstay thing. And they were young, they were invigorated, and they were running scrappy underdog campaigns. And they did win through leveraging social media, but also critically, by not sucking at politics. Don is an extremely charismatic guy. You can't talk to him and not love him. Nahed is not as much of a charismatic guy, but he is so smart and such a policy wonk that when you talk to him, you are convinced you know nothing and he knows everything. And like, both of them leveraged their talents to really great victory. Beyond that, though, I mean, like, Jennifer Rice, she won her election without really having ever logged on to social media in the last election. There's plenty of candidates who don't even have a presence. Some don't even have websites materially. And it's about hitting the doors. It's about hitting those doors and making personal connections.
Is there also this theory, without sounding like crass or disrespectful, because it takes a lot to like get out there and like door knock, put yourself out there, advertise yourself. But are there some wards that are just undermanned or underrepresented, where it's like, oh, there's three people, they all suck, so I'm just going to like pick the person that kind of, you know, nobody's really doing social media, or they have bad website presence, and they're getting out with the door knocking or like the fundamentals, but nobody's really standing out. So it's like every one of them is just marginally better than the other one in some theory, where it's like you look at some where it's like you have nine people running and it's like, okay, well, now I have to, you know, really stand out in the mix.
The field tends to self-select for what's electable. And what I mean by that is, if you have a competitive ward or an open ward, you'll have a bunch of people running because there's a lot of meat available. People can win. But if you look, for example, at the last election in 21, Tim Cartmell only had a single challenger who did take, you know, 17-18% of the vote, all of the not Tim Cartmell vote. But he won with the strongest mandate of anyone on council. And people kind of looked at that ward and they're like, I can't beat Tim Cartmell. He's not going to win. We'll get into my unfortunate choice to run for council at one point. But I declared in a ward against Mike Nickel. No one was ever going to beat Mike Nickel in 2017. He ended up winning with 65-67% of the vote.
Right.
It wasn't a plurality. It was a straight majority. And that's kind of instructive. There's a lot of reasons to run. One of them is to win. But many others are to win next time, or to sanitize your record, or to run for another office. So there's a lot of reasons why someone might declare their intention.
Kind of dipping your foot in the bucket type thing, getting your feet wet.
Yeah. There's also some amount of like, you can get a lot of attention by running for council. And if you have business interests, if you want to make networking connections, like, you can leverage all of those things and succeed in different ways. This, however, and I stress this down the barrel of the camera, is not an endorsement to run for public office. Don't. You'll lose. That will be a theme.
And it seems like you're very insightful, and I'm curious to know, where did this, or when did this all start for you? So let's get into it. Let's roll back a bit.
Record scratch?
Yeah.
It's me. Yeah. I wonder how I got here.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder why I got here. No, for people that don't know who you are or are meeting you for the first time, how would you describe yourself?
Well, depends if I'm being sarcastic about it. I'm Troy. I am a software developer by practice and trade. And then recreationally, I do what I call politics communication. I'm not a political science student. I'm not a politician. And I'm not really analyzing the political field as much as I like to take my inspiration from someone like Hank Green, right? He's not a scientist. He's a science communicator. His goal is to take these complex topics and help people understand them in bite-sized, digestible ways that works for them. And I've found that most politics communication does not meet people where they are. First, they're not on TikTok and Instagram, which is where the people are. And second, they're using words and concepts that don't resonate with the average voter. And that's the gap that I've aimed to solve for, I mean, at least over a decade now, to mostly middling success. Recently, better success. But, you know, I've tried a lot of things. I've thrown a lot of things at the wall. Some of them worked, some of them didn't.
I think that is also the part of it, too, where you're not always going to find the right method to, like, give that information. But the idea that you're trying and you're kneading the dough, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, I think that's the biggest thing. And then eventually, like, you find your lane, right? Like, you find out where people are meeting you in the middle. But when you talk about kind of politics being maybe ambiguous or kind of, in some sense, like patronizing, where it's like, oh, based on this and statistically, and it's almost done on purpose.
Well, it is and it isn't. There is some amount, like, for example, with party politics, we have an NDP leadership race going on. And yeah, there's some level of that obtuseness. You have to meet certain criteria and certain rules, and those rules are put in place to keep the outsiders out and keep the insiders in. And there's a lot of that within the old boys club of politics. But if you talk to a counselor, they do not want to have this walled garden. They want people to understand what they're doing. And critically, they want people to show up to vote. But connecting with voters is really hard. You know, we have this sense in our mind that politicians are corrupt and in it for themselves. And founded in reality, you look down south in the U.S. and there is plenty of corrupt politicians to go around. But they're not running at the local level.
No.
They're not running in our framework up here. We did have criminal mayors. You know, the enterprising user might look up some of our namesakes of parks. We've had our share of bad politicians who want to do bad things. But by and large, the field is not rewarding enough if you're not in there for the right reasons.
Yeah, you're not making like crazy.
It's a bad job. People who think that local politicians are going to it for the fame and glory. I have more followers on social media than most of the counselors.
Yeah.
They're not famous. They're not well respected, generally liked in their community because they show up to a community event and someone yells at them about an infill or something like that. And they're working 80 hours weeks. It's not a good job. And like,
and you're going to be more hated coming out of it than you're going in, most likely, because now it's like, now all this evidence that you suck is coming out after 4 years.
You know, there's some of that. And like, I'm not trying to say, woe is the counselor, their life is so hard. But I think there's plenty we can critique politicians on policy frameworks. We don't need to go to the ad hominem of they're in it for the wrong reasons, they're in it to scam us. Because frankly, they're not. There's so much better ways to scam us. Not the least of which is scamming the government itself. ArriveCan, great way to scam a government. If you just write a bad piece of software and sell it to the federal government, you can make bank these days. Don't be a politician.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. When you like started in the political. Was it running in 2017 or was it a lot before that?
No, I can remember Stephen Harper trying to change the rules around CDs and copyright legislation and me getting mad and emailing Tim Apple as a youth. Mm-hmm. This journey started early. I've always been politically engaged. I remember staying up late at night watching election coverage and watching the seed count change. I ran in 2017, regrettably, because I was a fan of The West Wing. I saw that politics was wrong. And
House of Cards.
Yeah, well, the West Wing specifically because I believed in the Sorkin-esque view of politics.
Right.
Where someone who's intelligent, well-spoken, and with a dream can change it through just their words. Mm-hmm. And people will rally to the cause of politics in full sentences. And they won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I lost that election quite handily. People can go on my Wikipedia page and see my 567 votes. I placed lower than Chris Christensen, who didn't have a website at the time of the election, but did have a name that was Chris Christensen. So thumbs up to him. I learned a lot in that election. The first of which is that I'm not a good politician. I'm not good at campaigning. I'm not good at like pulling the wool over people's eyes and talking in half-truths. And I'm not good at the idea that it's like, I need to care what stupid people think. Mm-hmm. When people were wrong at the doors, I told them they were an idiot. And that is bad, bad, bad plan. Don't antagonize your voters. That's the first advice you get.
Mm.
So in many ways, I was a very poor politician, but it does lend itself to other things. And with municipal politics, especially, you can have a lot of outsized influence without being around the council table. I argue that I have more.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
More influence now than had I been sitting around the council table, because at that point I'm one vote and my views are dismissed as partisan, right? I have my own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Versus outside the table, I can do advocacy. I can get six or seven councillors to agree with the position and vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still care about Edmonton. I live here. I bought my house here. I'm set up here. I'm in it for the long haul. And that means I need to make it not suck mm-hmm. for the long haul. I have a vested interest in making sure our city's great for the future. And this is the niche I've settled in.
Right. That's crazy because you would think in something like this, a job like this, there was a way around not getting your hand. You know, like on the way to the top, you got to wear blood on your hands, this whole idea. And I don't know. I mean, I'm curious to what you think of like, is there a way around this type of like manipulative like way of, oh, well, I have to kind of be a little bit more allowing people that aren't like, I can't tell them the truth. So I'm kind of going to tell them, oh, I'm listening to them. And then I leave and I'm like, that person's full of shit. And, you know, and this idea of like, I'm just playing nice with everybody instead of saying like, no, this is what I'm actually going to vote on, or this is what I'm going to do. And like, can you be kind of one of these, can you go into it knowing that you're not going to like feel bad for a choice you made or like a decision you made, or can you leave the job knowing you didn't like slight someone?
Well, so no, right? I think I would hesitate to say that politicians lie to their constituents because I think in generally they don't. One thing that does happen, though, is every voter feels like they're the most important voter. But at the end of the day, if there's a decision that breaks down 60-40, that means that 40% of people are on the losing side. And now a good politician and administration will find compromises so that everyone wins a little bit and gets a little bit of the pie. But when council is making a decision, if you listen to public hearings, the most common refrain that you'll hear from opponents of whatever it is, whether it's infill, whether it's bike lanes, whether it's taxation, whether it's rec centers, the most common refrain is, I was not consulted on this. Mm. But you were consulted. You were just on the losing side.
Yeah, you just chose the wrong person.
Well, and this is the thing, right? It's like, we have to make decisions as a city, and they will have positive impacts for hopefully the whole city and negative impacts for some people in a localized area. And it's council and administration's job to balance those conflicting ideals and make the right decision. And for the people who get a bit worse off because of it, sucks. That is what society is, though. And some people will be on the losing end of some decisions. And that's not an absence of consultation. That is what consultation is. And some people just end up on the losing side.
So was the constituent that you were running against, was he an incumbent?
Yeah, Mike Nickel was an incumbent.
Right. So what was your experience like when you were campaigning? Were people open to having discussions with you, or did you find that it was kind of like breaking through a wall?
So this is a general rule for municipal politics. No one is open to having a discussion because they don't care, right? When you're door knocking for a municipal politician, there's a couple ways it goes. You knock on a door and 80%, you don't get an answer because no one's home. Of the ones that open, I'd say probably half of them say, I'm not voting. I'm not interested. Have a good night. And then of the remaining ones, you get the standard diatribes of like, are you liberal, conservative, or NDP? And well, not quite how it works at municipal politics.
Neither.
You explain some of that. And very, very occasionally, sub 1%, you get like an engaged voter who's interested in talking policy and interested in learning. Most municipal politics is simply about making connection and smiling at a voter. I campaigned against Mike Nickel, and famously, if you look at our history, Mike Nickel and I did not get along in public. I took out a billboard making fun of him. It was good fun. But he was a really nice guy. I was a constituent, and every time I contacted his office, he was great about responding and great about working with me. And during the campaign, there was a couple times that him and his staff helped me out. They're like, here's some advice. And Mike Nickel had a really interesting campaign strategy where he would essentially run between doors, not like actually sprinting, but just like moving, so that when he arrived at doors, he was a little bit out of breath. And it made the voter think like, oh, this guy's running. He's very important. I'm taking up his time. And then he, within the first 30 seconds, ask for a sign. And like, that seems brazen. Like, you want to get the person on board. You want to share your messaging. And then only if they're supporting, ask for a sign. Dude didn't care. He's like, hey, I'm Mike Nickel. Can I put up a sign on your lawn? And you know what he did? Got a ton of signs. And like, this is the thing. Voters, one, some of them just say, yeah, put up a sign. So he leaves. Great. That works. Others just want to be a part of something, right? And they don't want the politician to beat around the bush. They don't want the politician to feel like they're lying. It's like, this is a transactional thing. I'm searching for your vote. I'm searching for your support. If he's upfront about it, great. And like, that can resonate with voters. And that's something that a lot of politicians, especially new politicians, really struggle with, is the ability to be a bit brazen, a bit forceful. And
kind of blunt.
And blunt. And you need to be blunt. You need to be blunt and you need to be quick because wards are huge. You've got 20, 30, sometimes 40,000 doors in a ward.
Yeah.
You can't spend a lot of time on them. And that's just the reality of campaigning. You know, you'll have people say on online forums, I didn't see any candidates come to my door. Great. You're one of 40,000 doors. It's hard to hit every door once. If you're not home, you're not going to see anyone. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just the reality of campaigning. We could fix this reality by, for example, adding six more city councilors at a cost of a couple $1 million a year. Politically untenable. No one's going to go for that.
No.
And so this is the situation that we're in.
When you look at being in it, you were independent, right? Yeah, because at that time they didn't have political
parties.
when you look at an independent and challenging an incumbent, what were the like learning lessons with funding and getting donations and stuff like that? How does that work in the political realm? And has it changed drastically now that we're looking at two campaign cycles ahead of time?
So there's a couple realities about running for public office. The first thing about running for public office is don't do it. You'll lose. And I have a standing offer. I met with, I want to say 13 or 14 candidates this election cycle. It's my standing offer is if you're thinking about running for public office, send me an email. I'll convince you not to. I'll meet you with you for coffee and convince you not to. And I did successfully for, I think, most of the people I met with this year. And basically, the takeaway is people don't understand how grueling running for public office is and how much you'll lose. The reality is if you are going against an incumbent, you're going to lose. Only a handful of incumbents have ever lost in the past
96% or like 98% of.
Yeah, it's a really powerful advantage at the municipal level. So, you know, and the flip side of that is open wards, because incumbency is so strong, when wards do open up, there's a lot of energy and a lot of interest in filling that ward. So they can be as hard or more difficult to win than an incumbency. Winning a city council race is really hard. And the benchmark I give people is if you on your own do not have the confidence that you could just call up your networks, your friends, and get 50 volunteers to go knock doors, deliver flyers, and raise $20,000, you can't win, right? You will need more than $20,000 to win. But if you can't just call people up and have a couple friends that donate $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, you won't win. You have not developed enough networks and you need to bail out before you lose and embarrass yourself. That's the advice I give.
Ton of money, yeah.
And it's harsh advice, but it's real advice. And it's advice that people don't give to people who are interested in engaging in policy. And you hear a lot of things like, oh, it's the process. There's no losers. You can engage. No, it sucks. You running for public office is not a good experience. You go door to door. You hit a lot of doors. Most people are uninterested in talking to you. It's not that fun of an experience. It's not this joyous experience that politicians will, with a lot of mental massaging, say they enjoyed. It's not a good experience. And most people will lose and they'll be worse off for it. And like that's just the frank reality. And not enough people talk about it.
Is adding on to that, is that why we see a lot of people that come from a more like higher economic, like social status type thing where it's, you know, look at Omar Mohammed selling his practice and guys that are coming from city making $180,000 a year. But in my head, and this might be a very like naive way of thinking, but have those people already been disconnected from like the normal people way of living? That it's like, yo, okay, that's great that you were able to like flood money into this and run, but like you probably live in an area where you have like a gated home or you drive this or that, or you have insurance and like you don't take the bus. So like, what would you know about the bus? And now all of a sudden you're going to council and you're being like, I'm going to make transit safe. It's like, dude, you've never took transit in 20 years. What are we talking about here?
I struggle with this line of thinking. A lot of people say, I want my politician to ride the bus. I want my politician to understand my...
Yeah, I also don't want my politician to run the bus.
Well, and like, but this is the thing, right? I think there is a different set of skills required to manage a $2 billion budget versus to think of how a bus is good, right? Like, at the end of the day, bureaucrats, and I know the head of ETS, she's great at her job, and she has a vested interest in making the transit system safer, better, and more reliable. And what I want from a politician is I want them good at big picture thinking about accountability and about governance and management. I don't necessarily need them to have a day-to-day experience. And I hate to say it, but like Joe Blow, who's making $35,000 living on the poverty line, riding the bus to work, he has an understanding of how the impoverished Edmontonian gets by day to day. But like, there's a tunnel vision amount of thinking there that may actually not lead to the greatest decisions overall. The best case scenario is to have a council that's comprised of many people. You have at least one of those people from that environment to bring their perspective to the table. But if I had to choose a bunch of rich lawyers or a bunch of Walmart workers riding the bus to work, I don't know. Both have downsides.
Right. And it's interesting you say that. I'm really happy that you, challenge that narrative, because it is true. I don't want someone to not have the level of skill or experience to take on that type of, project or that type of job. I just, my biggest worry is you get into some sort of tunnel vision, or it becomes something where, okay, say I go door knocking and someone's saying something completely not realistic. It's like, okay, well, if I'm the uber elite and now everybody's saying everything that's not real,
caution, no one uber elite is going to find themselves on city council because it's
this person's had a status for so long where it's I've never been told that I'm doing something wrong. So even though I'm doing something wrong, I'm probably going to just it's all right, man. You'll do okay. Why don't you just sit down there? And I think that's a misconception because, like you said, it's not like they're going in there and making $500,000 and everybody, it's not sunshine and rainbows. But I worry that people get to such a status where it's are you just running because this is the next step that a rich person would do, or this is the next step that you didn't get enough fulfillment running your clinic or whatever it is, where now you think you could lead people. It's does this really translate?
So I think the best way to address that is to actually look at the composition of our current Edmonton City Council, because the idea that status elites win elections is false. Mm. If you look at the makeup of the current council, our mayor, prisoner of war from India, came to the country, didn't know the language, was a bus driver and worked his way up. Hardly a status elite for Amarjeet Sohi. Michael Jans was a student council or a student union president, a school board trustee. He worked his way up. He lives in a co-op now, an apartment building. Hardly a status elite. Ann Stevenson, longtime city planner, just working within the bureaucracy.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Karen Principe, pretty close to status elite. Jean Principe is
wife.
A little bit of royalty in the city of Edmonton.
In Edmonton, yeah, for sure.
But, not like Daryl Cates level of royalty. You have Tim Cartmell, engineer, but an engineer that used to work for Northlands. Not a huge status elite there either. Joanne Wright, just a longtime resident, mother, and advocate from Ward Spomatopi. I think we've seen status elites try to run for council, Michael Oshry. He's famously quite rich. He was a councillor, but couldn't win the mayoral race. I think what you'll find is that for most people who come from positions of extreme wealth, it's just the job isn't worth it. It's a bad job that doesn't pay very much and doesn't have enough power to be worth it. It is in this nice little place where it is enough of a career upgrade that like it pays enough that like people do strive to get that role, but it doesn't pay so much that people who have everything want that role.
Right. Do you think there's a lot of misconceptions that people have? Again, I'm sure you did figure that because you're trying to make it digestible. But when you look at it, like we talk about incumbents, it's like, how much is that just like a factor of like the human being where they see re-elect and they're like, oh, well, if they got the job once, why couldn't they do it again? Or, ooh, city council. Oh, they must be really like big deal.
It's hard to connect exactly why incumbency is so strong. A couple of the things is because turnout is so low in municipal elections, it usually doesn't crest much higher than 30%. Name recognition is super powerful. It's just like if someone can recognize a name on the ballot, sure, they'll go for it. The other thing is that while online discourse has been trained to be vitriolic, and while our media ecosystem is headed up by Lauren Gunter and David Staples and a very large set of right-wing ideologues, incumbents are actually pretty well-liked by their constituency. For the most part, city councilors are the level of government that's closest to you. So you email a city councilor, hey, this traffic light timing is wrong, or hey, my garbage didn't get picked up, or hey, there's a pothole here. And you know what happens? They fix it. They fix it usually pretty quickly. And they have a staff that responds. They'll respond to basically every email they receive, as long as it's not like vitriolically offensive. And at the end of the day, that means it's like they've made someone's life better. Most people will email their city councilor maybe once during a term. And so if their only interaction is just like, I emailed him, he fixed my issue, great, he's got my vote again. I mean, that is democracy at work. And it's kind of what makes it so difficult to unseat incumbents is because you have a lot of campaigns that are based around the idea of like politicians are corrupt or politicians are trying to fleece you. And just like, it's not reality. And most people's experience from dealing with incumbents is like, no, there's no corruption here. That person's a nice person. I like them. And that's a messaging error. And it's why the most successful city council campaigns are hopeful campaigns with a vision from a charismatic individual. This is how Dawn Iveson really succeeds. And it's why I think in this election, incumbents are going to be...
The door stop right there. Thank you.
And it's why in this election, I think incumbents are going to be so overall successful, because the primary prevailing message against incumbents is Edmonton is broken or Edmonton is failing for this reason. And sure, there are problems with the city of Edmonton. But if you look at the reality, in the past 2.5 years, 200,000 people have chosen to move to Edmonton. They wouldn't have done it if this place is shit, right? All of these people that chose to move here moved here because they have ambitions to succeed here. And so the idea that we're presenting of Edmonton is a trash place that isn't liked by Edmontonians, it's not close to the truth.
And yeah, where is that pinch point? Like, where do we see that this type of reality is getting skewed, and how do we bring it back down to like a relatively normal level? Like, is this what we're always going to see politics at, or is there going to be like a shift in the narrative at some point where people have more of like a looking through the glass type thing of where we see it?
It's going to shift, and it's going to shift for the worse. The reason we're in the state we're in right now is because of party politics. This election, we have municipal parties in the election, much to the consternation of everyday Albertans. There was a government study, or there was a government survey that was put out. 75% of Albertans opposed the idea of municipal.
And then they were like, all right, we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway. And like, I knock on doors and people hate parties. But what parties get you is a vitriolic, non-functional setup. And one concrete example of this is, you know, campaigns are pretty long in the municipal election. Most people have been campaigning for at least a few months now. Tim Cartmell was campaigning since last October. And he was campaigning as part of a party. That meant that
Better Edmonton.
Better Edmonton. It didn't have a name at the time. I called them all Timbits. That name has stuck. He very much doesn't like it. So don't go up to him and give him a box of Timbits and say, this is for you and your party. He won't like that. But what he did is he put together 12 candidates in every ward that said, these are my choices for city council. And then he went back to work for 7 months. And in those 7 months, he was sitting around a table with people who he all basically told directly to their face, I think you're bad at your job and I think you should be replaced. That's the message that he's sending by running a candidate against all of them. And then he expects charity and collaboration from these people. The big example here is he wanted to go on vacation when council had business to accomplish. Now, 2 years ago, they might have worked around Tim Cartmell's schedule. They might have given him charity.
But it's like you just kind of like shit on me.
Yeah. You give me the middle finger, I'm giving you the middle finger right back.
Yeah.
And that's what party politics begets us. Mm-hmm. It creates teams, and then the teams bash heads, and then there's no charity offered to the other participants in the team. And that's where we're headed. Hopefully, this party experiment is rejected en masse. I've seen some polling numbers that suggest that might not be the case, that some of these party individuals might be winning. And I can think of at least 4 Better Edmonton candidates that are going to be winning.
Is the reality of that party support the same reality that you would see in like a higher level of government? Because I've heard some just stories of people going into it with the intention of, oh, I'm going to get all this support. And then you're not really getting the same type of funding or the same, you know, and there's more bureaucracy now and guys are worried or females worried. Oh, well, when I came in, the idea that I could like vote against something that was for my ward, and now it's kind of getting a little murky in the water. And is the idea of it actually turning out to be what they thought?
The short answer is we don't know. We don't know how this will actually behave because we've never had a party win an election before.
Right.
What we do know is that there is some consternation within Tim Cartmell's party, right? The pitch of Better Edmonton was a single vote. You know what you're getting. You vote for a Better Edmonton candidate. You know that these are our policies and these are.
And then we're just going to sway the.
Yeah. But I mean, the leader of the party says there should be a moratorium on infill citywide. One of the members of the party, Nicholas Rubottom and Ipiko Kinbiotsi, he created essentially a lot of the infill bylaws. He was the president of IDEA, the Infill Development Advocacy Association. And he didn't want an infill moratorium. Across the board, every candidate had pretty varying opinions on what this infill motion should be. Mm-hmm. And that's just one example of, okay, well, if the party can't even agree and come together, what's the point? And Tim Cartmell has been very clear about what the point is. The point is the extra money. Parties give him extra money. He can raise double the amount of funds. He can get corporate donations twice. And he can spend more money on the election.
So when you talk about, okay, so break that down for me, please, yeah. And for the audience. So by meaning he can get for twice, he can get it as like a candidate and he can get it as
yes.
a party.
So right now you can donate $5,000 to municipal candidates across the board. So you can choose one candidate and give them $5,000, or you can choose 5 candidates and give them $1,000 each.
Okay, but it's $5,000 limit.
$5,000 limit. And corporations can also donate. The previous elections, corporations weren't allowed to donate. Daniel Smith has re-added corporate donations.
Oh, I can see how this can get greasy.
Yeah.
You have a business, you give them $5,000, the business donates them $5,000.
Yep. And then also, inexplicably, all the business owners' sons and daughters suddenly have $5,000 to give.
My wife is given $5,000, my wife's charity, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, and, yeah. Ooh.
And then the additional factor here is a party can also receive that $5,000 donation. So you can donate to the candidates, and then you can donate to the party, and the party can distribute that to any candidates that they want to within the party.
Does it have to be equal?
No, you can donate however much you want. So,
then if
there's
they
want to
shut
limit.
A dude out, like, so say if, like, a guy pisses them off, they can just tighten the...
Or, for example, if you want to say all your candidates have to raise money for the party, but all of that money goes exclusively to Tim, that's fine. That's perfectly allowed. So one could argue that this is a vanity project. And Tim Cartmell has not had a lot of popularity and success. But his path to victory here is through the party ticket, right? If each ward where he's running 12 candidates. If each of those surrogates can get 4,000 votes and people convert on the ticket, 4,000 votes per ward is enough to win the mayoral race.
Right.
That's his path to victory. It's not on his likability. It's not on his platform. It's on just spreading out and fanning out and getting
thrown everything at the wall, seeing what sticks.
Yeah. And like, I mean, Andrew Knack or Michael Walters or Raheem Jaffer or Tony Katarina, they have a set of volunteers. But Tim Cartmell has a built-in set of 12 volunteers. Every time a better Edmonton candidate knocks on a door, theoretically, they're knocking for Tim Cartmell. There are exceptions to this where, like in Ward Spomatopi, Harmon Condola appears to hate Tim Cartmell and won't mention him at the doors, and all of his signs and his literature doesn't mention Tim Cartmell at all. You know, these are some of the things and the nuances and goosebumps that have happened. But broadly, parties are a huge advantage municipally. In Calgary, where, you know, they're also not well-liked, there is a party that has a platform of we hate parties. In Edmonton, we decided...
We're the party that hates parties?
I believe that's the Calgary party.
Yeah.
It's the one with Dave Thiessen running as the mayor. And, like, you know, it is a strategy. It's like, these are the rules. We are not... It's the same thing when you're crossing the road. You look both ways because you can have the right of way, but if you're dead, doesn't matter. You're playing by the rules. And if the rules are biasing, if the rules are giving a advantage to the conservatives in the race, then the progressives might as well use the same rules. That was the take they had down in Calgary. In Edmonton, we decided not to. And independents said that, like, the mojo of being in a party is bad enough that, like, it's not worth the benefits. We'll see on E-Day, which was right. I suspect, you know, Edmonton and Calgary are culturally different. I think both jurisdictions made the right choice for them. But if Tim Cartmell wins, what was it for, right? Like, all of the independents are going to be questioning, should we have formed a party? And should we have contested this? Would we have won? And, it won't be possible to know. But what is possible to know is that this election is rank. It's rank with influence from the UCP. Even the UCP did a fundraiser. It was $55 contributed to the UCP. And then they handpicked candidates that they thought aligned with them and fundraised for them. I've never seen a municipal election candidate get that kind of support from a provincial party so directly, but it's happening this election. And the thumb is on the scale. And if we as independents in the city of Edmonton push back and elect only independent candidates, the Minister of Municipal Affairs has already said he will intervene. He will, if taxes are too high, he will undo bylaws and force changes. He will meddle in municipal affairs. And that's the reality that we're living in Alberta right now.
So when you look at just like the average day person, one thing is it's so satisfyingly evil that when I look at politics, it's like, this is exactly what reality TV, like this is where the Big Brother thrived and is this idea of like structured chaos and just like, is following politics in general, like taking some sort of burden on someone's mental health? Like, do you think like it actually is like drinking some sort of venom? And how do you like protect yourself from not like going crazy?
I mean, from a self-serving perspective, I've already drunk and spat out the venom, so enjoy my filtered content. It takes a toll on my mental health. I've followed city council for the better part of like a decade and a bit now. And you know,
hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Now, most city council meetings, I will watch and read the reports. I'll read news articles. I'll talk to councilors and constituents. Like, I'm in it. I'm in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot. Part of what I'm doing here with social media and politics communication is trying to distill some of that information so people can get what they need to know in a digestible format that doesn't take such a toll on their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, sorry, you gotta eat your peas. We are a society that exists through a collective, and the collective functions through governance by electing representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to participate in that, you suck.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't show up to vote, you suck. You're ruining it for the rest of us.
Oh, I agree. And you have no right to complain. When you look at your type of content, do you think there's a part of almost humanizing certain candidates, or like in general humanizing people that are running for politics? Because, for example, I just watched Raheem Jaffer, and he was getting interviewed by Northside Hub, and they're asking him, like, what's your favorite spot to go eat? And it's like, I think about like the antidote of a professional athlete, and they're like, I have this opinion. They're like, shut up and dribble.
I mean, so you told me this is going to be released on Thursday, but as we're recording this, it's a very specific date. In what time is it? In 5-ish hours, Taylor Swift will be dropping her new album. And I'm mm-hmm. very excited about that. And you know who else is excited about that? Andrew Knack, huge Swiftie. And I did, you know, fluff content where I did Taylor Swift trivia with Andrew.
Right.
And I think that is the point. And it is to humanize politicians, because municipally, there's not legislation in the same way that there is federally. If you're a federal politician, you might say, I want to pass a bill to add more health care, add dental care. I want to give child care for $10 a day, et cetera, et cetera. But the bulk of what municipal politicians do is they handle emerging business. So someone has submitted a rezoning request for a plot of land, or, you know, there's an extra snowfall this year, so we have to adjust the snow clearing budget. We have to change how we operate. It's dealing with emerging issues, so it's less platform-based and less based on their ideals.
Mm.
And what that means, and I hesitate to say this, elections are vibe-based, right? You want to elect the candidate with the best vibes. Mm. And that's what I endorse as the strongest selection criteria. Is like, do they like, give you the ick?
Yeah, are you a good hang?
This is exactly it. And you want them to be a good hang, and you want them, you know, to be good at their job and everything, but you want them to be someone who you feel represents you by proxy. And some of that is getting into their hobbies, getting into their personality, seeing who they are, because someone who can't have fun and can't enjoy themselves also probably doesn't have fun in Edmonton and doesn't see the joy of Edmonton that you want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually very valuable to have a candidate that is personable. And the other absolutely massive thing is a city councilor has no power. They are a single vote of 13. That means for anything to pass, they need a minimum 6, usually 7 other people to agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
If this person gives them the ick, no one's supporting their motion. Right?
Right.
You need a charismatic individual to build consensus and to rally people around their cause. So honestly, picking someone who has good vibes is the best choice. They're the most effective type of counselor. And like, sure, read their platforms, read all their policy. Wonks are good, but pick someone who doesn't suck. Like that, that's the takeaway.
Yeah. Now, without jumping too far, you mentioned in one of your like judging criteria or like how you kind of like vet candidates is not using the word common sense.
Yeah.
Is using the word make it make sense, is that just as vague?
Yeah. So there's a couple things that I have red flags for candidates. And these are things that usually indicate to me that the candidate charitably doesn't understand what is going on, but uncharitably is trash. And so any candidate that's talking about common sense or common sense solutions probably is an idiot. Mm. One, common sense is not a common framework. Mm-hmm. And two, most issues are actually quite complex. When a candidate is saying things like common sense, what they're implying is that the current set of city councilors or administrators or bureaucrats does not have common sense.
Yeah.
And assuming that the current set of councilors is stupid is not a good plan and signals that that person has not done the requisite research to understand what's going on, or they have and they're talking in bad faith. Mm-hmm. So things like make it make sense. Well, you can make it make sense by doing some goddamn reading.
Mm. And giving like an actual fact-based.
Yeah. A lot of candidates say, I don't understand how they could make a decision because they haven't read the supporting documentation. And hard reality about being a city councilor, you have to read 400 to 800 pages of reports every week. That's your job. Most of it is sitting down Sunday evening and reading for 4 or 5 hours as you dig through these ungodly long reports. That's most of the job. If a candidate can't read any of those reports and actually make reasoned decisions from that, they're not a candidate you should support. In the same vein, if a candidate says things like, I'm going to cut taxes, and doesn't give a specific program or service and a dollar value, the budget's open. You can read the entire city budget and see line by line exactly what everything costs. When they say efficiencies, they're lying to you. Mm-hmm. They're either stupid or they're lying to you. Council had a thing called Council's 2% Initiative. It's been running for about a decade. And basically, it was an ongoing directive to city administration. It's just whenever they're going through their business, try and save 2% through efficiencies, eliminating redundancies, eliminating unused positions, you know, leveraging technology, that sort of thing. And administration has done a lot of that, but we're getting pretty bare, right? There's not a huge amount of fat available to trim. People like Raheem Jaffer, who say we're going to cut a quarter of the entire city budget. While...
And hire 200 and something cops?
Yeah.
At a price of what, 100 million or 150 million? Or...
Yeah. It'll be about $120 million.
I forget who it was, but I saw a billboard and it said, we're going to make transit 100% safe. And I almost like spit out my coffee because I said to myself, what metric in the world would you be able to prove that something is 100% safe?
Yeah.
And who let you put that on a billboard?
And like one of the other things, you'll get into this argument about safety versus perception of safety, and both matter. But here's a concrete example. Imagine you're walking down Jasper Ave. You're walking 3 blocks and you get from one end to the other end and nothing happens. Zero crimes occurred. You were safe. Now, imagine you're walking those same 3 blocks down Jasper Ave. You're walking and halfway through, there's someone who's a little bit tweaked out on meth. He's yelling obscenities and his pants are pulled down. He's mooning you. And then you get to the end and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Zero crimes occurred. You were still safe. But in that second scenario, your perceived safety was extremely low. And this is what we talk about versus safety versus perception of safety. Safety is actually very high in Edmonton. It's not a very dangerous city.
Yeah, crime rates have been down, what, 40, 45% or something?
Yeah, it's, you know, it peaked a little bit during the pandemic. There was some problems.
And you have to look at, too, like, That's based on the statistics of reported crime.
And it's also per capita. So, right. You know, as we get more people, maybe more raw crimes are occurring, but per person, it's less. You know, there's many ways to massage the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think when people hear the conversation around safety versus perception of safety, they feel like it's dismissive. No, perception of safety is hugely important. We don't want that person yelling obscenities at you down the street. But that's not a policing issue. Right?
Mm.
There was no crime that occurred. So there's nothing the police can do. It's not illegal to shout. And that's where the idea of like, okay, we have candidates like Raheem Jaffer that say, we're going to make things 100% safe by hiring more police officers. That's missing the point that we don't actually need more safety. We need more perceived safety.
We need more shelters. We need more resources. We need more whatever the case is.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because given the amount of knowledge that you have and the amount of experience that you have kind of on the back end, when you're considering candidates to endorse,
yep,
and you're trying to reach out to them to make content, is there laws in place municipally that is a barrier to like make your content?
Yes and no. So I have an advantage in that I do this all recreationally. This is not my job. Mm-hmm. I'm not paid to do it, and I'm not paying to do it. So I do it all for free. Mm-hmm. If I was contributing significant dollars to this, I would need to register as a third-party advertiser. I would need to disclose a bunch of information. But I need to spend, in previous elections, it was like $1,500 was the minimum. I think it's like close to $4,000 or $5,000 now. I'm nowhere near that. Mm-hmm. I think I've spent $17. I did get a Hamilton outfit for one of my bits. So
right,
with the rental cost, I'm at like $50.
Right.
But that could potentially be a barrier. For me, the barrier is actually endorsing a candidate, because I take that very seriously.
Mm.
And I'm not endorsing candidates that are losers.
Right.
And this is one of the pretty significant problems. I take this actually quite personally, because Jennifer Rice is the worst counselor we have seen in a generation. I stand by that claim. She bullies her staff. She violates the code of conduct, and she's grossly incompetent in city meetings. I've heard from city staff that they schedule their breaks around her speaking time because nothing of value is said. It sounds mean, but she sucks.
And she's had record numbers of
staff
over, where the average is like 4 to 5 staff. She's had 26.
Yeah, she's a pretty bad counselor. And she won by 39 votes in the last election. The second place candidate, Rhiannon Hoyle, was a good candidate, but she had a history with the Alberta Party. I didn't love her as a candidate. I was supporting Glynis Leib, who, you know, had a career of like working with the University of Alberta and some sexual assault prevention and LGBTQ SIA plus advocacy. I liked her a lot. Glynis is a good person. I personally convinced no fewer than 120 people who were considering voting for Rhiannon to vote for Glynis. Had I not done that, Rhiannon would be our counselor right now, and Jennifer Rice would have lost. And that's what I mean when I take it seriously about not picking losers.
Hmm.
I can say one candidate might be the best choice, but if by me endorsing that candidate who in my opinion is the best choice, causes the worst choice to win, I take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's not just about evaluating the candidate, it's also about evaluating the field. So before I make an endorsement, I'll bike down to the ward, I'll start biking through neighborhoods, and I'll do sign counts. I'll see what support they have on the ground. I'll look at social media, I'll talk to all of them, and I will often speak to their campaigns and see how they're doing. And if someone's not doing well, I probably won't endorse them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a responsibility I take that I go over and above a lot of other people who share endorsements. And that's just because I do this recreationally. So if I'm wasting my time, it's not worth it for me, right? I want to see results for the time that I'm spending. And results include a city that is governed appropriately for the future. I've struggled a lot this year in Ipiko Kunviotsi because this is Jennifer Rice's ward. Both Funke Olkude and John Morgan, well-supported candidates. They're doing well on the field. Neither is clearly better than the other. I like them both for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I've endorsed both of them. My take here is that we're at such a low turnout election that endorsing one over the other would cause a bunch of vitriol and consternation that would actually just depress turnout and probably lead to a Jennifer Rice victory. Maybe having both of them split the progressive vote also leads to a Jennifer Rice victory. My hope is that by endorsing both of them and lifting both boats, maybe they'll both place above Jennifer Rice and we'll be fine. But that's one of the places that I've really struggled, is you know, people have asked me, who's the right candidate? Who's going to win? And I don't know. And there's no such thing as municipal polling at the ward level. It's just like, it's not done. It's too expensive. It's not worth it. So vibes, you got to go on vibes and your best guess.
Does that make it hard for like considering what criticism is valid and considering what, like when you started doing political commentary, I would say, was this idea of, okay, am I going to be able to...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Deal with whatever pushback or argue this opinion, or and with the idea that there's not much like concrete evidence of who's succeeding and who's not succeeding, is that like a consideration of, now I'm taking everything too seriously, or I'm allowing everybody to ruffle my feathers because there's really no evidence to support who's right and who's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I was grown and forged on the internet. I'm okay with a little bit of people getting angry in my DMs. But you'll notice I haven't endorsed school board candidates. And that's because I don't know enough. I learn about council races. Like, and I know who I'm voting for in the school board. I'm happy to endorse Sadiq Sumar in Ward G. But I'm not doing it across the city because I don't know enough about the race. I don't know enough about the candidates. I don't know about enough about the level of support.
Yeah,
there are better voices to do that commentary.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the capacity to do it all on my own. On a municipal race level, there is some amount of like, I make videos and usually I go with them. I don't have an editorial board or anything like that, but I do have a group of about 12 people and I call them my Senate. And there have been a couple videos where I'm like, I don't know about this one.
So I'm going to send it in for a vote.
Yeah, I've produced this. I need some sober second thought. Does this go? Most of them do go. There were two, and I won't say what they were about because of the Senate, that I killed because either it was wrong, it wasn't worth it, it was taking a shot that I wasn't sure. When you come at the king, you best not miss. It might have missed. And so I do have that level of like, I try to get everything right on the first thing. I try to write a good script. I try to do my research. But sometimes I'll produce something and I'm like, I don't know if this passes muster. And I'll reach out to my network to say, does this pass?
That's interesting because it's also the thing too where you want to trust your gut and you want to be like, yeah, like I'm good and I want to go through with this. Now, is that something that you've sharpened over time? Or has that been like a consistent sliding scale of like, this might be an emotionally driven or based on the conversation? And like, how do you manage that, like, and bring that down to earth to make sure you're not like wandering in the stratosphere and just like doing whatever, you know? Again, you have this group called the Senate, but is there some like personal practices that you have to like ensure your own like wellness while you're like orbiting in this political world?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. Is I don't get intensely personal. This is not to say I won't attack personalities. I absolutely will, and I'll make fun of people relentlessly. I believe in the power of mockery.
Right.
But things that are unrelated to council business or their professional business, like for example, what their children do, or maybe if they were to have extramarital affairs or things like that, where it's like, I joke that I'm the TMZ of Edmonton City Council, but honestly, I'm not. I don't do the TMZ gossip rag stories because for two reasons. One, it kind of distracts from the valid issues and would invalidate the work that has I've been done before.
Yeah, it would almost destroy your credibility.
Yeah. And then the other part is like, it's easy to be wrong about it, right? Like if you, for example, let's go through a hypothetical, say X candidate is having an affair, right? And I'm doing this salacious story on that. And then it turns out that while this candidate was in a marriage and then having another relationship, it was because their marriage was abusive, right? Mm. It was a domestic violence situation and they got out.
Yeah, now you're the asshole.
Now I'm the asshole, right? It's some of those cases where it's like with personal issues, you're never going to have proof or receipts and there's always going to be two sides to the story. Mm-hmm. And like when you go at the king, you best not miss. And there's so much potential for missing there that I just don't wade in. And like, I think the community is better for it. I think there are some stories that have died because of that personality rule. But broadly, if someone is being really bad in their personal life, it's going to bleed over into their professional life and you'll find something.
Yeah, they'll eventually slip up. You don't need to throw the banana peel in though, because they'll do it all by themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If there's anything I've learned from Tim Carmel's campaign, it's never interrupt your opponent when they're making a mistake.
Yeah, just let them fall. And honestly, I say too, in like my own professional job, like sometimes people need to experience like wearing that on their face to actually, because people can tell them, but some people have such big egos where it's like there's nothing of them experiencing the shame of screwing up there's nothing of equivalent to this person. Like if they're ego driven, the only thing that is going to change them is like a shot at the heart. Right. And it sucks because it's like, I will only know how to deal with a fight if I see more fights. Do I want people to fight? No. Do I want experience of how to manage conflict? Well, I need that stimulus of conflict. And it's just this weird, ironic, like feedback loop. And it's kind of sadistic, right? It's like, it's almost in some way, like where you see like political, even when people vote the wrong way and then a year goes by and they're like, knowing what I know now, I would have never done that. And it's all just like a learning experience. Considering we're this close to the election, where do you see, like, do you see this opening up like a void in your soul?
No, I would be like a really exceptional unemployed person because I'm very good at keeping busy. As an aside, recreationally, I also am building a cabin with my bare hands.
Right.
You know, and that's fallen to the wayside because I'm doing election coverage. Mm-hmm. I fill my time with a lot of stuff. Earlier in the summer, I had a goal of winning Fringe. What does it look like to win a theater festival?
Right.
One might ask. And whatever metric you can think of, I tried for that metric.
Right.
It took a lot of personal toll, but I enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have ADHD, I promise, but I do throw myself into things and mm-hmm. really try to get the best of it. So yes, after the election, I'm going to take a big nap, but like politics doesn't end at E-Day, right?
No.
And one of the things is if you look at my slew of endorsements for this election, majority of them are incumbents. I actually think this city council, when you look at what they've done and the governance and you like ignore the post media spin and all of the right wing vitriol online, I think they've done a really good job with the hand that they were dealt. And I wonder if there was something like what I'm doing right now for the duration of this term, would we be in a different situation right now? Would more people understand some of the good that's been done and would incumbents have more support and would the dialogue be very different? I don't know, but it's something that I think I'm going to try this next term. And maybe the incumbents will suck and whatever, it'll be what it'll be. But I think having that communication throughout the term of like, here's what's happening and here's why it matters, it could be valuable. And I hope it makes an impact.
Yeah, like it would be interesting to see how you'd be able to communicate this with these counselors, knowing that now they have like a 4-year window where they don't like, they're like interview, no interview, like, bro, I got the job. Like, you know what I mean? Like kiss it. But it would be interesting to see how that relationship changes after October 20th and see if some of the willingness to interview or the willingness to communicate and the transparency, whether that continues moving forward and those like relationships flourish, or to see some people like, yeah, I just used you.
And I mean, so like, I've done this a long time. I have a lot more friends during election periods than I do during term.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm boosting them during a campaign, but when I hold them accountable during the term, they're less into that. Mm-hmm. I've done this a long time, and I do not give candidates any grace, even during election periods. So, like, I've done election content with quite a few candidates,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very upfront with them when I start, and I say, look, I'm not going to give you any editorial control. You're not going to see a cut before this goes live. I'm going to do whatever I want to do with this footage,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have to consent to that and film anything with me. And, like, you know, some people have declined based on that, and sure, all the power to them.
Yeah.
I think back to the last election. One of the things where people either loved it or absolutely hated it and thought it was the most cringe thing I've ever did is I did a parody of Amarjeet Sohi with the Hamilton opening musical number.
Mm-mm.
And there was a point I was talking with Sohi's campaign and I said, look, here's what I'm going to do. I want you to sing the last line. And he was into it. He talked to his campaign and they probably rightly convinced him, you know what, let's let this be a third party thing. We don't want the campaign officially involved in this. And I think in hindsight, it was probably the right choice. But, you know, it was a choice that was made in the moment. It's like, I know that Troy is going to do what he's going to do. And
am I willing to take the risk?
Well, and this is the thing, the upside of like being fun and willing to collaborate, it's a good upside. Like,
right.
People get positive vibes for that. The potential risks are also high.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one example of candidate didn't vibe.
But that also allows you to establish that credibility of saying, hey, like, it's my responsibility to make sure I'm doing this in good faith or doing this in a way that's graceful and not like slanderous, yeah. or like, I'm not trying to be a shithead.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to be a decent person holding people accountable, but I'm not going to be gross about it, right?
I did an interview with Funke, who's running an Ipiko Kunibiotsi, and when she showed up to the interview, she brought her, I believe it was her campaign manager, at least some campaign staffer with her, and they both looked at me with such suspicion, and they're like, so what is this about? What are you trying to do? What's your angle? What am I going to see? Yeah, and then I'm like, look, this one's a good faith one. You don't have to worry. We're going to make you look good in this. And I did. But like that is what campaigns understand and know about. And like, I hate to say that like I'm an extortionist, but sometimes when I'm communicating with a campaign, I'll send them an email and I'm saying like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Do you want to participate? And I won't get a response. So I'll follow up a day later and I'm like, if you do not respond, I'm going to take this as non-consent to participate, and I'm going to go with that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're worried about, like, is Troy going to put a potted plant with my face on camera?
Right, and then they're like, well, I got to get ahead of this.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I lean into my reputation a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm house always wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I control what I'm producing, I can create a situation where I'm the victor.
Yeah.
And people know that, and is it a little bit ugly? Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, but that's also, like, sometimes with social media, there is some sort of buy-in where, like, I just recorded a podcast yesterday, and I said, like, I was like, oh, we have this friend that's into politics, and, like, out of everybody I know, I didn't think he had, like, the depthness of, like intellect, and he's like, how dare you? And I was like, yeah, it was a joke. Relax. Like, I wasn't actually like taking shots at you. You're a member of the podcast, so we were just teasing a bit because you weren't here.
Yeah.
But some of it is like, you know, it's not meant to be like, you know, do you ever consider like, because what I think of right now is like a lot of people are getting like backlash in comedy and then they're going, hey, I'm just a comedian. Yeah. You shouldn't be taking me seriously. And is that ever something you consider like, there's also a responsibility that like there's not really a safety net and I can't fall back. Like, I'm just like a political commenter joking around, making fun. So like if I ever go too far, well, why are you taking me serious anyway?
So there's a couple things to unpack with that. And the first is there's an instructive story down out of Calgary, which is Nate Pike at The Breakdown. Nate pretty consistently said, I'm not a journalist. And then when Sam Raich sued him, a lot of the discussion in the courtroom was, this guy isn't a journalist, so he should not be afforded the journalistic protections that we afford to other journalists. He shouldn't have a lot of these benefits that we give to journalists, and that makes it much harder to win a lawsuit. So you will never hear me say the words that would be said there. I'm not getting it clipped. You can't trick me. Mm-hmm. I won't confirm that I'm a journalist. I won't deny that I'm a journalist. I'll let the audience make that decision. Mm-hmm. What I know is that I do acts of journalism. I do research. I'm not pretending to be unbiased in my reporting.
Right.
And so when you get further into that story.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Story of it's like, well, what are you and how are you behaving? There, it's a pretty big question. And I find that I never want to fall back on, oh, I'm just joking around.
Yeah.
I stand behind what I do. I'm on Reddit with my real name. I use my real face. I go out in public. I own everything I say.
Right.
I don't have... There was an Instagram account, Don't Be Tricked by Tim, that came out during this election. It made, you know, memes about Tim Carmel. It was very, very funny.
Right.
I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make it. But half the city has accused me of making it. And my response has always been the same. Dude, I post this shit on Maine, right? Like,
Why would I?
I stand behind what I say. If I had thought of that joke and had the capacity to make that artwork, I just would have posted it because it's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stand behind what I'm doing. And that means that there are some things that I won't say because I am standing behind what I'm doing. It also means that, like, I do have to be a little bit careful because I, for example, don't have a bunch of liability insurance, right?
Right, so if you get sued for defamation.
Yeah, I try not to defame people. I have a few lawyers that, like, I will run things by, and I'm like, hey, am I good on the defamation front? And, like, the thing is, when I'm usually right. And truth is an absolute defense against defamation. So, you know, there's...
Yeah, the facts are there.
Yeah. But, like, broadly, when I'm making decisions about content, it is... The first thing I say is, like, is this entertaining? Because if it's not entertaining, I've failed.
Mm.
And then the second thing is, like, what value is this providing? How does this move the story forward?
Mm-hmm.
Like... You know, there's a few things that I want to say. Like, I love to be petty. I love to really get into the weeds and push people's buttons and get them reaction. You'd seen Josh Doyle doing that in my DMs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to continue that feud and just keep going, but it gets stale, right?
And it's like, what's your intent?
Exactly, exactly.
What am I trying to do here? Am I trying to twist the knife in?
Yeah.
Because eventually the pendulum shifts and it goes, well, first I was on his side, but now it's...
And, I'm okay with bullying people that deserve to be bullied,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not okay with being a bully, right? I don't want my personality to be the guy that bullies to get jollies out of it.
Right.
But some people do deserve to be bullied, and I'll bully them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, is there a hard and fast rule for what constitutes either that? No. It's something where you've got to suss it out, and you've got to check in with yourself and make sure, am I making the right call here? And broadly, I think I've made the right calls all through the line.
That's awesome. Before we get you out of here, two quick questions.
Yep.
I want to know, what do you think the most underrated issue in this political cycle is for the residents of Edmonton?
That's a good question. I would say that the most underrated issue... a lot of them get airtime. That is a very good question. Give me a moment to get a good answer there. I think the most underrated issue is one of competency, right? We have a lot of people speaking up and saying we want change, or we need to vote the whole council out. That's dangerous thinking. A lot of this last term, which again, I think was very good, there were some downsides. There were some agenda management issues. There were some problems with motions and process, because you had a relatively rookie mayor and a rookie council and not a lot of domain knowledge to help guide people through. You had some good Aaron Paquette, Andrew Knack, these people who have been on council a long time who were helping to guide the council through. But there's a lot of skills to being a counselor. There's a lot of skills to asking good questions. There's a lot of skills to knowing who within the organization you need to talk to. And to get rid of all of that legacy knowledge all in one go is a recipe for disaster. So I think there is the underrated issue is competency and history. And can we get people who are making sure that the city is unaffected? We don't want a huge upheaval. We want gradual and consistent improvement. And I think that's where people are going astray this election.
And what can people expect from your social content after election when we look at this next, say, calendar year after October? Do you have any kind of plans into the strategy going forward of how you're going to still keep engaged with your followers, or is this something that you kind of put to bed?
I don't think I'm going to put it to bed. I am not married to any one idea. I do what works, right? If people buy their clicks and buy their watches, signal to me that they're not interested in this content after the election, which, fair comment, some mm-hmm. people might not be interested, I'm going to stop doing it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not in the... I don't need to grind against something that's not working. I have heard pretty consistent feedback that people want this and they want this to continue. So I think what it will look like is, first and foremost, a break, a well-deserved break. And what it'll probably look like from then on is coverage, 1 to 2 videos a week of something that's happening at City Council, with a focus on bringing you inside the curtain. It's easy to read a global news article and say City Council decided this. It's a lot harder to understand how councillors came to the decision that they came to. And I think my connections to a lot of councillors and being able to quickly call them up on a WhatsApp call or get them on a video to explain some of their thinking, I think that's going to be a potent communication exercise. So it's something that's percolating inside my head. Of course, come next August, I'm going to become once again the preeminent fringe reviewer. And all the people who came for politics are going to have to hold their nose and deal with it because I like the fringe a lot. It's our best festival. But we'll see. I'll play it, week by week.
Awesome. Where can people find you?
On the internet. My website's troypavlik.ca. It's got links to all my stuff, but I'm Troy Pavlik on Instagram, on TikTok. on twitter.com, which doesn't really exist, Blue Sky. I think that's most YouTube. I have a YouTube. I met with some, so I get recognized on the street reasonably often. But usually it's, hey, you're that guy from TikTok, or I saw you on Instagram. But I was at an event the other day, and then someone came up and said, I follow you on YouTube. I'm not on social media. I'm like, you're a fascinating creature. Mm-hmm. That is a new avenue. I haven't heard anyone say that. So, you know, you can subscribe on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
I do a lot of stuff. I have a newsletter, I guess. I don't really keep up to it. This is one of the problems is, you know, back in 2017, 2018, I was pretty big on Twitter. Like, my tweets went reasonably viral, and like most of Edmonton was on Twitter, and it was a great community. It's ephemeral, right? Twitter doesn't succeed in the same way anymore. No. It's not that community. And like, Instagram's gonna go the way of the dodo. TikTok eventually will, once TikTok becomes MAGA North, you know, that is what it is. And so like, I don't have a plan to like put everyone in some different walled garden that I control. It's just, follow me around on the stuff.
You're just doing what we're...
It'll be ephemeral, and we'll all enjoy it while it lasts. And then when it's gone, it'll be gone forever.
Fantastic. And then they'll have to come see you at Fringe.
Yeah,
exactly. That was an awesome conversation, Troy. I think you delivered an immense amount of value, the way that you communicate, and the way that you're able to break it down was not only insightful for me that has just a little bit of some type of knowledge. It really broke it open for me of things that I also have to consider when I am vetting a candidate here for Ward or Nick. Is that how it pronounces it?
Anolnik. Yeah, when you have an R in Cree, it becomes kind of like an L when it's in the middle of the sentence. But, you know, there's a set of videos. You can practice the pronunciation. Some of them are easier than others. But, you know, I was talking on Reddit today. There, people were complaining about the ward names. And I think the thing that people don't understand about the ward names is that this... Don Iveson was one of the people that bore witness to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that occurred in Edmonton. This place is pretty solidly rooted, you know, Amiskwichi, Wascaigon, Turtle Island. This place is an Indigenous place. We are not Indigenous people. And there's this idea that when we name things in a way that isn't accessible to Western Europeans, we're doing a disservice to the people that are there. And, you know...
But you're also doing it the other way.
Sure. And, like, there's an argument, too, that...
It's a double-edged sword,
10 years ago, 20% of the Edmonton population were foreign-born immigrants, closer to 50% now. And so one could argue that if we are focusing only on Indigenous names, we're putting that culture above the other cultures. And people did argue this. And my simple fact of that is, I don't think we should rename Florence. I don't think we should rename Paris or Nice. The place that we're in was called something, and we renamed it before. And I think it is really powerful that we have these new names that are meaningful and that are a little bit hard to say. I think it would be less rewarding if you didn't have to work for a little bit. And a lot of people don't want to work for it. A lot of people see Ibiko Kanipiotia and they say, I don't know how to say that. I don't know how to spell that. But like, then you say it and you're like, I know how to say that. I'm in a club. And this club is somewhere, it's someone that's been here for thousands of years. And so I like it a lot. I hope we don't go back to numbers. But if pace wins, we will go back to numbers.
Yeah.
I don't want to take over your job, but you did a lot of work prepping this interview and putting some questions, and you didn't get to one, which I thought was really good. So I'm going to throw it back in. And it was, you asked, what's something that we could do tomorrow to make City Hall more accountable? And I think that's like a really insightful question, because when we're talking about the election, there's so many like big ideas and long-term thinking, but like, we need some quick, easy wins. And I think one of the things that does not get nearly enough love is the idea of the process. We have a process in City Hall that is a little bit broken. Some of the examples are when we approved the police funding formula, or when we approved the Uber bylaw, or when we approved a rec center, these big things, a lot of the times the motion that you see is to receive report for information, yes or no. It's a really obtuse way that we manage our bylaws. When you go to the legislature or you go to the federal parliament, there's Bill C-5, there's Bill 2. There's named bills that accomplish something and members vote up or down on that thing. That doesn't happen at city council. When we talk about the motion to reduce the mid-block infill units from 8 to 6, you might have thought that was a motion that you voted yes and it's a reduction, but it was actually worded in such a way that you had to vote no to get the reduction, and then it failed because enough people voted yes. It's a very confusing and obtuse thing. The thing we can do tomorrow is start working on the process to name what we're voting on and expose that in councillor voting records. I previously made a site, yegvotes.info. It aggregated councillor voting records. And the thing I ran into is like 98% of what Edmonton City Council does is bureaucratic administrative motions. They vote to approve the agenda. They vote to hear from public speakers. They vote to close the public forum, et cetera, et cetera. But then the meat of it, if you want to find out a councillor's voting record, how they voted on the issues that you care about, can't be done. You just can't do it other than watching 4 years of city council.
Can't even FOIP it?
Well, like, you can FOIP it. The records are there, but like, it's hundreds of thousands of motions.
Not everybody's going to do that to like get their own
insight. And like, $100 million for bike lanes. That's a big issue, right? That's something that people want to find out how people voted on. If you're searching the motions database for that motion, it was accelerated bike implementation part 2 action plan. That's what they voted yes or no on. It wasn't $100 million for bike lanes. It's obtusely named and it doesn't help anyone. City Council is very open. It's very transparent. Anyone can show up. They can get their 5 minutes and they can talk. But how we share that information, it's not quite good enough to be transparent. And that's change I'd like to see tomorrow. Yesterday. 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's definitely... No, I agree. Like, the way that the language is created and the way that all of this information is passed down, it's almost, like I said, some of it, I believe, is almost done on a purpose. Where it's like, hey, if we just like, and then people are like, I don't know.
Right? Yeah. And like, some of the places where this materially matters is because of the process. Like, every budget time, you'll have councillors who vote to add amendments that increase the budget total. And then they vote against the budget. Hmm. And what does that mean? They get to say, I voted against the budget, but they added a bunch of new costs to it. And Edmonton has to have a budget. There is no option for the budget to fail. If more than 7 councillors vote against the budget, they have to start again. They are not allowed to go home. That's the legal process. And like, we almost had some budget check-in in the last budget where you had some councillors like Tim Cartmell, like Karen Principe, who were saying, I'm going to vote against. And then everyone around the table said, if you do, so will we, and you don't get a vacation. And like, you know, again, with lack of charity that's happening. But that's one of the things where it's like, if you can't, if it is required that you pass a budget, it should not be an option to vote no for it, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just make it so that it's passed amendments. There's some legalities with the MGA. It's got to be worked with. It's another thing I'd like to see change, and a lot of councillors would like to see changed.
Yeah.
Sorry to get wonkish in the last 2 minutes.
No, I enjoy it. I'm glad. We're definitely going to have you back on the podcast because we have a lot more to talk about. But we will conclude this episode. I thank you so much for coming on, Troy. It has been a pleasure. If anybody watching wants to go see his work, you can check the descriptions below. We will have all of that information there. This has been Solo Spotlight, and we will see you next week.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.